Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and in today's episode I'm going to mainly talk about a recent trip to Friedrichshafen in southern Germany. This is part of a European holiday my wife and I were taking in Germany and Switzerland, and I was fortunate enough to be able to time it so that I could go to the ham radio show in Friedrichshafen, which was held in it was the third weekend in June. So we arrived the day before the show started into Friedrichshafen, flew into Zurich and caught a train from Zurich down to Lake Constance, and then caught the ferry across to Friedrichshafen. And even at the ferry terminal there were signs and indications of where you needed to go to get to the ham radio show. So that was quite cool when we stepped off the ferry. So I was very fortunate to be able to get there at this time of year. We've been to Europe on various other trips over the years, but never really been able to get the timing correct to get to this radio show. And it's certainly something that's well worth going to. I was really quite amazed at how busy it was on the Friday. It was almost a little bit overwhelming, in almost a question of not quite knowing which bit to get to first. But I had 2 days there, so it was very good. It was very good socially. There was a lot of people that I met that I've known through contacts over the air for many years, but never been actually met them. There's a lot of people that I knew that I had met recently, and there's other people that I ran into that I hadn't met for maybe 40 years. So that was pretty cool. And that social theme continued on pretty well for the whole of the weekend. So it was as good socially as it was in terms of trying to get around all the various stands of the new exhibitors, or the new equipment exhibitors, I should say, and also the second-hand flea market, which was held in two of the halls. So very, very busy time and lots of fun. Not only did they have the new equipment manufacturers there, but they also had lots of stands with national societies and CW clubs and DX clubs and contesting clubs and the expedition clubs. All sorts of things were there. There's just about everything you could think of that somebody who's interested in amateur radio would find something at this show that would keep them happy. So certainly in terms of the new equipment on offer, or the new equipment that was being exhibited, I mean, that was extremely interesting. There's a new range of HF transceiver out the moment from Yaesu, which is the FTDX101D and the 101MP. And these are very nice transceivers, dual receive capability, quite a unique waterfall display they have, and lots of really nice features. Basically SDR based type transceiver, very good characteristics for crowded band conditions, which obviously is interest to people in Europe and in the US. Maybe a little less useful here in Perth, Australia. The bands never really are as crowded as they'll ever be in Europe or the US or maybe Asia. But nevertheless, those transceivers are pretty impressive, and it's nice to be able to go to a show and get some hands-on experience with one and have a chat with the sales representatives there that seem to be pretty knowledgeable actually. So and of course it wasn't just Yaesu there. There's every major equipment supplier was at this show. The new K4 was there, which is next step up from the K3, and that was quite interesting. There's some new features on the K4. It's physically a little bit bigger, and they had all the other peripherals and accessories associated with that range of equipment. Again, probably pitched at serious HF DX operators and contesters. It's quite an impressive piece of equipment. ICOM, of course, was there, and It's very much getting to the case, I think, with the HS transceivers, certainly in the sort of medium dollar price bracket, where maybe at the point of diminishing returns in terms of the difference between all the different transceivers. I, for example, have got an Icom 7610, which is, you know, an extremely good radio with the dual receive and the filtering, and all the probably the bells and whistles that you could really need, and all the extra capabilities that probably I'm not using to the full extent that other people, you know, who buy one of these transceivers may buy the transceiver for a different reason to me, for example. But all these transceivers now are, you know, they're very good radios. And I guess this shows up really with, even if you look at, say, maybe current band conditions, even with very low sunspot numbers, there's still pretty good activity on 15 and 20 metres. 15 metres is quite often open to Europe from here with flux figures of maybe 66, 67, somewhere around that number. And I think a lot of this goes, all of this comes back to the performance of these radios and improvements in antennas and whatever. And if you contrast that with maybe previous solar minimums, where maybe if you go back two or three solar cycles, maybe back to the 80s or the 90s, maybe the gear wasn't quite as good. And so consequently, we're getting to the point now where even under marginal band conditions, the improvement in radio gear and the improvement in antennas, it makes a difference. So obviously, it's be nice to have the bands a little bit in better shape, but that's not going to happen for a little while, certainly not on the HF bands. But it's still possible to make QSOs on these bands. And this actually is probably probably a good example is when there's a contest on. There seems to be an immediate uptick in activity and band conditions. It, obviously, the contest doesn't make the band conditions any better, but the activity means that when the band is open, at least there are signals there, which doesn't always, I suppose, happen out of contest-type weekends. So, anyway, getting back to Frederikshavn, the second-hand area there was very good. There was lots of stuff there that really, well, there's lots of things there that I probably wasn't interested in at all, but it was fascinating to see some of the equipment that was there and the variety of equipment. And certainly if you lived in Europe and you had maybe an easier way of transporting larger pieces of equipment back home, then if you were driving to Frederikshavn, then it would be ideal. Lots of different things you could buy there if you're into any sort of homebrew type activity, lots and lots of parts, pretty good prices. And if you're into building any sort of equipment whatsoever, whether it's high power, low power, QRP, whatever it is, you would find components there in the secondhand flea market that would certainly be of interest to you. So that was very good. I think I probably spent as much time in the secondhand area as I probably did in the new exhibitors area. But I divided my time up a little bit between the two. Obviously, there's places you can eat, there's places you can drink. It's a busy place and it's very buzzy. And if you take, for me, the fact that it was very social, meeting a lot of people that I've known over the years, and it's very good atmosphere there. You know, everybody's there enjoying the experience, and certainly something that I can recommend if you're interested in any aspect of amateur radio. It doesn't have to be HF operating or CW or contests or any of the things that I happen to be interested in. Any part of amateur radio is represented at that show. I was actually really surprised in the secondhand area how much antique radio gear they had. A lot of really old stuff that you really don't see anymore, and there's lots of people selling this. So, and lots of people, as I say, selling things that I would really like to have bought but couldn't fit into my luggage, or it may not have been good to try and fit it into the luggage, or very diplomatic, being as we had still more than 2 weeks of holiday. Maybe it's a sort of trip, or maybe it's a sort of thing you need to organise. So it's at the end of the holiday, and you've only got to try and figure out how to get it back on a a couple of plane trips, but it wasn't practical to start trying to carry all this stuff around Europe with us. I did buy a small, most of the things I bought were small, obviously. I did buy a small QCX 5-watt CW transceiver kit, which is pretty neat. It's a pretty neat kit. It looks like it's going to be fun to build. I've experimented a little bit from here with QRP, a little bit of homebrew, a little bit of just QRP running the main transceiver. I've got the beams on 40 meters. That actually makes quite a bit of difference. And certainly work into Europe from here with 5 watts without really too much trouble when the band is quite good on 40. So that's going to be a fun kit to build. At the moment, it's still sitting in the shack here in its plastic bag, unopened. A good friend of mine, Steve, VK6VZ, he has built one for 20 meters. So, but mine is a 40 meter kit. These are single band kits. I believe that range, the QCX transceiver range, has got an all band kit that's in the offing. It may already be out, I'm not sure. It wasn't available when I was at the stand at Frederikshavn. The single band kit, I think, was about €40. It wasn't really that expensive. And it's got some really nice features for a homebrew type QRP transceiver. So I'll have a bit of fun with that, play around with that, see how that goes. Other than that, I just bought a few small components, that stuff that really is not all that easy to find here. That was the criteria. Anything that I could get here, I figured that, well, don't really necessarily need to buy that from southern Germany and try and get it back to Australia. The one interesting thing actually in the main hall with the new exhibitors was the number of stands that were selling either wire or complete wire antennas, wire accessories for antennas, towers, masts. The spider beam stand was extremely busy, as you would maybe expect. It is a German company and this show's in Germany, but the spider beam stand seemed to be packed out on the 2 days that I was there. And also there was a couple of other stands that were very busy selling wire and insulators and centerpieces and balance, all sorts of things. Those and of course that appeals to a lot of people in the hobby, building their own antennas, simple wire antennas that they can get good performance out of. And certainly it was quite interesting. So it was certainly, as I say, and in the second hand area there were people selling antenna accessories, masts, fiberglass sections, heavy duty fiberglass sections. Some of those were quite interesting. Would dearly have loved to have maybe bought some of those and try to get them back, but I did have got a few contacts with those now and probably could get them shipped back over to Australia. But you've got to order a reasonable amount to make it worthwhile, and then obviously try and find the most economical way to ship these things back. So that's something for a future project. So the show runs for 3 days. It was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's a free shuttle bus you get from Frederikshavn out to the exhibition halls, which is pretty good. It could be walked. I had a look on the map there. It's probably about a 25-30 minute walk, something like that, from Frederikshavn. But as it worked out, I just caught the shuttle bus. That was quite convenient. And pretty good visitor numbers. I think that I saw something maybe 13,000-14,000 for the 3 days. So quite busy. There's lots of other things going on apart from just the exhibitions in the halls. They've got various talks and seminars and maker type events as well, youth programs throughout the 3 days. And it's a lot of there's a center stage where they had some seminars and some talks on various aspects of the hobby. Really, every time I walked past there, that all of that was being conducted in German. So that rather precluded me from sitting down and taking part in that, because my German is not particularly good. So maybe next trip, try and get some German under my belt. But I don't think I'll be going back next year. You know, it's the sort of place that maybe go back to every 2 to 3 years, perhaps, and enjoy the experience. And catch up with some old friends. It's quite a lot of activity that seems to go on after the show. There's various groups that have dinners there after the show, or they might have a get together or some drinks or whatever. So certainly that plays a big part in the motivating people to go there, for sure. So I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's something that I've wanted to do for quite a while, and it was a great experience, and certainly would like to try and get back there again. It helps that it's in a really attractive part of the world. Southern Germany is a great place to visit. Lake Constance is a beautiful area. We went on some great walks around there. We also hired bikes and rode around parts of the lake, which was good fun. Very easy place to travel in. So certainly recommend, even if you're not going for the show, I can certainly recommend that part of the world in terms of travel destination. And we spent probably around about 10 days around the Lake Constance area and traveled a little bit around, stayed in various spots on the lake. And then we traveled from there down to Zermatt in southern Switzerland, very close to the Italian border, and spent around about a week in that area, and then finished off with a couple of days in Geneva. So Zermatt is very attractive. Obviously, a lot of people go to Zermatt to view to walk around the areas of the Matterhorn, the mountain. It's really serious. So they climb the Matterhorn, but you've got to be a pretty serious climber to do that. But there's lots of other walks that you can do around that area, which you don't necessarily need to be a mountaineer to undertake. Lots of lakeside walks, really spectacular scenery. And again, we were incredibly blessed with fabulous weather. We had a view of the Matterhorn the whole time we were there. It was just really quite wonderful, and certainly would recommend that area as well. So every time we've been to Switzerland, we seem to have a fabulous time. And certainly we've also been to Southern Germany in the past as well before this trip, and again, very good time. But yeah, so they're great countries to visit. They're not necessarily, certainly the time of year we were going in June, they're not necessarily over touristed either. So it's not too crazy. Maybe if you go there in July and August when the children are on school holidays in Europe, maybe it would be quite a bit busier. But they seem to cater quite well for tourists. It's very hospitable. It's very, certainly in Switzerland, it's extremely well organised. We've never found any need really to rent a car in Switzerland. We tend to use the trains, the buses, the cable cars, the ferries. Everything runs pretty well like clockwork in Switzerland, it seems, as far as timing is concerned. So it's quite easy to get around the country. So that was pretty good. And since we got back, well, we've been busy. Probably the reason that I haven't managed to get to do a podcast for the last 5 or 6 weeks has just been a lot of catching up to do here, a lot of catching up with business and family. And also we're in the middle of a kitchen demolition and renovation. So it seems to be distracting somewhat from any amateur radio activities. But I have been on the bands a little bit since I got back, and it's been quite interesting. A little bit of DX on the low bands. Still not ideal, of course, in August from here. I'm trying to work into maybe Europe or the US. They've got pretty high static levels on the low bands. That doesn't help so much. But 40 metres has been okay. It's been a little bit of stuff on 20 metres. 15, there's also been, as I say, the 15 metres has been open, even with very low flux levels. And as I'm doing this podcast, it's around about 10 o'clock in the evening here, and 20 metres is still open to Europe. So that's quite a good sign. I think this weekend we've got the Werkel Europe CW contest. And that's an interesting contest. It's a contest really like no other, in the sense that it has a unique exchange called a QTC, which is a report of a previous QSO that's sent from stations outside of Europe back to stations in Europe. So to further explain, the Werkel Europe is, if you're in Europe, you can only work stations outside of Europe and vice versa. But there's an additional aspect to the contest whereby stations outside of Europe can pass back details of previous QSOs to stations in Europe, and each station participating in that exchange gets the benefit of extra QSO points for every QTC passed. You can only pass 10 QTCs per to each station that you work. So if well, that's actually probably not a very good explanation, but if you work a station and they request QTCs, you can only send 10 QTCs to that station once, and then they've had their quota of QTCs, and then obviously you prepare the next batch of QTCs for the next station that might request them. So it's quite kind of interesting. The contest requires obviously a little bit slightly different skill set. The stations outside of Europe, obviously sending the QTCs, have the task of sending them, which is simplified greatly now, obviously, with computerized login software like M1MM and any popular login software program for contests will cover the WIE contest. And so it's relatively easy to send the QTCs. The stations you're receiving them obviously have to receive them and not make mistakes, because obviously then you incur errors in your final score. So this situation is probably, I did this contest many years ago from the UK on a few occasions, and it was a little bit of a different experience then, because actually I'm talking about the 1970s now, when we had pencil and paper type logs. We had manual dupe sheets, and the QTCs obviously were all copied manually, and they were all, you know, sent manually by the stations outside of Europe, sending back to us. So it was actually a bit of a challenge. It was quite a hard contest, because obviously in contests you can get fairly tired on occasions, and trying to receive maybe 10 QSOs from a station outside of Europe that's not all that strong, that's rattling along at 35 or 40 words a minute, and you're copying down manually, is a challenge in itself. So contest has changed a bit. Well, contesting has changed a bit in terms of how we disseminate and log all the information, and computer logging has made life obviously so much easier. Not the least of which is that when the contest is finished, it's pretty easy to generate the necessary files to the adjudicator, send them off, and your work is done. All your dupes are duly marked, and your score should be worked out, and the adjudicator essentially works out the rest. And even, I mean, to that extent, and most of the major contests now require you to get the logs in within, I think it is 5 days before the end, after the end of the contest. So yes, this weekend the WAE contest with the QTCs is on, and it's worthwhile having a bit of a dabble around in it. It's an interesting contest, and certainly if you're outside of Europe, you will get requests for QTCs, and you can send those back to the Europeans. And if you're inside of Europe, it works the other way. Of course, you're forever trying to gain QTCs from the stations you're working. So quite a fun contest. It'll be interesting to see how the bands are. At the moment, the band's not too bad, and I'm sure that with the contest on, there will be an uptick in activity. There always seems to be. The bands always sound better when there's a contest on. I don't know if that's simply because there's always activity on the band, and so whenever the band happens to open up, all of a sudden you think, oh well, the band's open, and that's great. Whereas outside of a contest, sometimes the bands are open, nobody even knows they're open. And I'm talking about primarily, obviously, CW type activity, which is my main interest. But of course, there's a lot of interest at the moment in FT8 and new mode FT4 that's coming out for primarily set up for contesting. And certainly with FT8 and FT4, it is possible to work at very low signal strengths below the noise in many cases, which is ideal when conditions are bad. It's probably not something that I'm that interested in. I've played around a little bit with FT8, and I can see the attraction. It doesn't particularly fascinate me, but I can see why some people would enjoy it. And everybody's got different motivations within the hobby, and FT8 is certainly something that if you've got limited facilities, you've got QRP, you've got very limited space for antennas, at least FT8 gives you a way to engage and enjoy the hobby under poor band conditions, which otherwise you may not be able to experience. So I think it's like everything else in the hobby, it's got its place. Actually, it was an interesting slight digression, but on the way to Frederikshavn one morning on the shuttle bus, I sat next to I sat opposite a couple of guys that were interested in amateur television. Now, I've never really been in any way interested in this at all. I had the t-shirts on, I think it was BARTG or something or other. I can't remember quite what the initials were or stood for, but it was definitely amateur radio television. And these two guys were sitting next to each other, and somebody else sat down next to me, and he started talking to them, and it turns out he was into the amateur radio television activity as well. And these three guys, the shuttle bus took about 20 minutes to get to the show. These three guys chatted away about amateur television. I didn't have a clue really what they're on about. It was completely, most of it was completely foreign. A couple of, I think one of the guys had retired, but somehow or another, by some strange coincidence, the three worked out that they'd all, at one point or another, maybe worked in the same building together or maybe even worked together many, many years ago. It was all quite interesting. And it was an example of how amateur radio encompasses just really all types of interests. It wasn't anything that interests me at all, but it was interesting listening to them chat away about something that really I knew nothing about. Never been the slightest bit interested in getting involved with the amateur radio television, so to speak. But they were all very enthusiastic about it. They were really looking forward to the show. There was obviously something at the show for them because there's something at Frederikshavn for everybody. And I think Frederikshavn might be the second biggest show. I think maybe Dayton in the States is slightly bigger. But as I say, I can thoroughly recommend it if you get the chance at all. Take the opportunity, get to Frederikshavn in late June or whenever the next event is. So yes, getting back to amateur radio here in Perth. Well, yes, have a listen on that contest on the weekend. I've probably got a few plans for some antenna work before CQ Worldwide in late November for CQ Worldwide CW. And weather here is, we're still in winter. It's still pretty cold. It's still pretty wet. Well, cold by Australian standards, that is, not by European or Northern Hemisphere standards. Our cold is not really that severe. In fact, winter's a really great time in Australia. It's nothing you can't do in winter. It's very good indeed. So that's about it for the moment. Probably have a little bit more news about antenna experiments and maybe a little bit more about the QCX 5-watt CW transceiver kit that I'm planning to build. I'm keen to get my good friend Steve VK6VZ onto one of these podcasts. He's got some interesting ideas and some interesting views on radio and HF and CW and contesting and FT8 and all of the above. So probably could see if I can get him on for the next see if I can get him on for the next podcast. Should be quite entertaining. Well, that kind of wraps it up for now. So thanks for tuning in. If you've got any questions at all, you can email me on hamradiotopics@gmail.com. And in the meantime, take care and good luck on the bands. 73s from Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey.